Mike Tirico here with some of the 2024 Team USA athletes. What's your message for the team of tomorrow?
To young athletes, never forget why you started doing it in the first place.
You have to pursue something that you're passionate about.
Win, lose, or draw, I'm always going to be the one having a smile on my face.
Finding joy in why you do it keeps you doing it.
Be authentic, be you, and have fun.
Joy is powering Team USA during the Olympic and Paralympic Games. Comcast is proud to be bringing that inspiration home for the team of tomorrow.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The Department of Justice is now saying that it's estimated so far this year the vast majority of asylum seekers in Ireland have travelled from Northern Ireland. Our chief reporter Barry White joins us now. Barry, good morning.
Hi Pat, good morning.
You've been highlighting this on this show for almost a year. So what do we know about these latest figures?
Yeah, Pat, we have been highlighting this issue of asylum seekers entering here via Northern Ireland for 10 months now. I first highlighted it in July last year on your show. And the Department of Justice are now saying that an estimated 90% of asylum seekers in Ireland have travelled from Northern Ireland so far this year. Now, previously, Minister McEntee had said that 80% of asylum seekers coming into the country are coming from the UK via Northern Ireland across the border. And Pat, via a statement I've received now from the Department of Justice, they state that it has long been the case that a significant number of people apply for international protection for the first time in the International Protection Office. This has increased in 2024. So to date in 2024, there have been 6,739 applications for international protection at the IPO. Of these, 6,136 were made at the IPO for the first time and not at a port of entry.
Okay, so if they were stopped at Dublin Port or stopped at Rosslare, they would make that application at that point.
Or the airports.
Or the airports. Yeah. But if they come in from Northern Ireland, there's no one to talk to.
There's no one to talk to. They go straight to the International Protection Office. And Pat, those figures I just went through, it means that 91% of asylum seekers who've entered the country so far this year arrived here unchallenged and went straight to the IPO to make their application. Now, the comparable figures for 2023 are that 78% of asylum applications were made at the IPO last year, at the IPO and not at a port of entry.
Okay, but 78%, and this was the almost 80% that Helen McEntee used first, it's now gone up to 91%. But even last year, almost 4 out of 5 were obviously coming across the border.
Yeah, well, in July last year, Pat, via a Freedom of Information request, we highlighted that 75% were coming via the IPO, or coming via Northern Ireland and making their applications at the IPO. So we know that this has been going on for a long, long time. So I suppose that's what we're looking at here, Pat, and this has been going on for a long time, and we've known for a long time that people have been entering via Northern Ireland.
Now, you highlighted this, as you mentioned, last July, 10 months ago. You also spoke to asylum seekers last summer who told you that they had been previously living in the UK, not transiting the UK, but actually living in the UK.
Yeah, so Pat, as I said, last July, via an FOI from the Department of Justice, I found out that only 25% of international protection applications were made at Irish ports or airports in the first 6 months of last year. And at the time, Pat, I tried to find out how the other 75% of asylum seekers were entering the country. And Pat, the reason I had to try find this out myself at the time was because the Department of Justice said they had no actual statistics to show how this 75% of asylum seekers entered the country. All they knew was that these applications were made at the IPO, the International Protection
Office.
Did they
not ask the question?
Well, they obviously didn't at the time.
How did you get here? What was your means of transport? I mean, a lot of the people that you spoke to were quite open about it, that they weren't kind of trying to hide how they got here. They were actually honest.
I found a few asylum seekers who spoke on the record and who were quite honest. There was dozens of asylum seekers I spoke to off the record who told me they entered via the UK as well. And Pat, as I say, I highlighted that the vast majority then in July last year were arriving here via Northern Ireland. Now, I was able to find this out from speaking to around a dozen direct provision centre owners and managers who told me that they had many residents who had previously lived in the UK, while sources in the Department of Justice and the International Protection Office at the time told me that it was the case that the majority of international protection applicants were entering via the land border. And Pat, as you say, at the time in July last year, I spoke to a number of asylum seekers who told me they had previously lived in the UK and they told me why they came to Ireland.
We all passed like England and Scotland. You know, we've done the whole, I've done the whole thing. So it's just getting tough with this new government. You know, this Rwanda thing, and
so you were living in England, but you had to leave.
But yeah, so for that reason, you know, even like since the Brexit, people change a bit. You know, so. Not a lot of job opportunities, even there is. You can't pay the rent very high, and you know, it's, I don't know how people can manage when you have families, and you know.
But do you have the same worries in Ireland, because we're in a kind of similar situation?
Yeah, similar situation, but what can you do?
I was living in UK, but you can stay there for a long time, because you couldn't work without a work permit, so no chance.
So why did you choose to come to Ireland then?
Because the Ireland accept all people, and I think they will give us some opportunities.
I don't know why they do that. Maybe they've got prior knowledge that if you claim at the airport, it's all the same, you will end up at IPO. But maybe they had knowledge. I did not have any knowledge how to go about this system. I did not have that knowledge.
Yeah, and are there many people here unlike yourself? You came straight from South Africa, you were forced to leave, but are there many people here now who were living in places like the UK who now come here to claim asylum?
Well, I have spoken to just a few that they said they had life, let's say in the UK, for example, yes, that have come here to apply asylum, yes.
It does appear, Barry, that the government is finally going to crack down on asylum seekers crossing the border.
Yeah, Pat, the Department of Justice now say it has been working on legislation since the High Court ruled last month that the designation of the UK as a safe third country did not comply with EU law. The government insists it is simply restoring an agreement it had with Britain since 2020, which allows people to be returned. This was a post-Brexit agreement which was underpinned by the Common Travel Area. However, British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak was adamant yesterday that no deal can be done with the state until there are moves by the European Union to allow Britain to return migrants to France. So this seems like it's going to rumble on. But I suppose also, Pat, we have to ask, why are the government only acting now? We raised this 10 months ago. So the Department of Justice have known this is an issue for 10 months. I've questioned numerous government ministers about asylum seekers entering the country via Northern Ireland on numerous occasions in the past 10 months. I suppose this only really caught fire when I questioned the Taoiseach Micheál Martin in Amman, Jordan, about the UK-Rwanda bill last week. He claimed that it was forcing some asylum seekers to come from the UK to Ireland. The Daily Telegraph picked up on this, and that's why we've had an ongoing debate now for a week. But I also questioned the Justice Minister, Helen McEntee, at a cross-border conference between Gardaí and the PSNI and Cavan just 2 months ago. And when I asked her, could the government do anything about asylum seekers entering here via Northern Ireland and the land border, this is what she said.
Well, I think every effort was made for the right reason to ensure that our border remains open, but that doesn't prevent these types of movements from happening. That's always been the case, and it is a matter of close cooperation. It is a matter of the Gardaí working with the PSNI, of governments working with each other, of operations being put in place, and the Gardaí can maybe speak to that, but there are operations underway to try and prevent, but also where people are detected, that they're returned back to where they come from as well, and those operations are underway.
Now, it's interesting because when they were asked how many people have actually been returned to the UK under the agreement, and it didn't have the force of international law, but it was an understanding between two neighbouring countries. Nobody.
Yeah, nobody. The numbers are small.
So even bringing in this new legislation, which is supposed to rectify the legal anomaly which was produced by the High Court, when there was a whole business of is England a safe country and all the rest. Anyway, they hope to rectify that. But so we go back to the status quo of an agreement where nothing actually happened.
Yeah, and is this clampdown on migrants crossing the border going to work or act as a deterrent? Because
what do you
think? Previously it didn't. Well, Pat, the government have for months told me that they already were cracking down on this. But as I've highlighted earlier, July last year was the number of asylum seekers making applications at the International Protection Office was 75%. That figure has now increased to 91%. While, Pat, the number of asylum seekers who have arrived in the country this year in the first 3 months of this year has increased by 72% when compared to the same period last year. So the number of asylum seekers coming across the border has significantly increased in the 10 months since we highlighted this. So the Department of Justice have been asleep at the wheel here. And Pat, while there is no doubt many asylum seekers are coming here from the UK because they fear, or because some fear, being deported to Rwanda, it's certainly not the main reason asylum seekers are arriving here, as far as I can see. Asylum seekers are not coming here because of UK immigration policy. They're coming here because of Irish immigration policy, Pat. Asylum seekers come here because it's so easy to enter the country. Processing asylum applications still remains too slow in this country, despite the Department of Justice saying they sped up the application process. And Pat, as has been highlighted on the show many times, if someone has their international protection application rejected in Ireland, it is very, very unlikely that they're going to be deported. So asylum seekers are going to keep coming here, and they're going to keep coming across the land border.
Yeah. Well, I've no doubt that a certain cohort will have been, as one man mentioned, the whole Rwanda thing, as he put it. That gentleman that you talked to a few months back, I mean, he had a Scottish accent on top of his accent of origin. So he clearly had spent a long time living in Scotland.
Yeah, and I've met many asylum seekers, Pat, who have had English or Scottish accents. I know it's only anecdotal, but I've met dozens. Now, most of the time they don't want to go on the record, but they're fairly open and telling me on where they previously lived, and a lot have lived and worked in the UK.
Meantime, what appeared to be a fairly clean and clinical operation happened in Mount Street this morning with the dismantling of the tented village outside the asylum office. And our reporter, Steph Regan, spoke to some of the people in the Mount Street area.
It shouldn't have been allowed to happen in the first place. The state should have stepped in. It was a public thoroughfare, public road, which you couldn't use. And I do feel sorry for the people. I mean, obviously they're coming from difficult circumstances, but as the state says, they're coming through other countries, which I mean, they should have been declared in first.
And you live nearby. Were you nervous about it, or were you, did
yes.
you feel sorry for them?
No, I was both nervous and feeling sorry for them, because, as an example, 2 weeks ago I was coming from town about 10 o'clock in the evening, and two of them were openly exposing themselves, going to the toilet on the side of the road into private apartments that people probably paid a fortune for.
I counted 134 tents yesterday, yeah. All right along, every nook and cranny, there was a tent.
And you're in a wheelchair. You know, some people have been saying they felt unsafe in this area. Is that unfair?
I think it's a little unfair. They kept themselves and they didn't bother anyone. Now, maybe it was me in a wheelchair the last 5 years, but I don't think so. I think they'll move on now, and God knows where to send them.
Yeah, they've literally been picked up and bussed out.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Are they? Yeah.
Yeah, we don't know, to an IPAS centre somewhere else. Apparently sanitation and, you know, the likes and everything,
yeah,
like that.
That is a problem.
Yeah.
The stench down the laneway there was unbelievable. Unbelievable. But,
well, I'm just concerned of where they're bringing them to be honest. And they need to look at the bigger picture, I think.
Yeah.
But the last time it was a bit of fiasco around Paddy's Day when they all came back in, but this isn't good. It's awful what's happened to them here. So yeah, I hope they find the right accommodation. I agree with Ivana Batrick when she says Baggot Street Hospital is empty, and I think they could really do something about that. And there's a lot of empty buildings in Dublin City, so I don't know why we have to have this, really.
Yeah, my name is Noel Wardick and I'm the CEO of Dublin City Community Cooperative. Well, early this morning, the 200 plus refugees that are living here in appalling conditions were informed that they would be moved to as yet unknown destinations. So it would appear that the state is dismantling the settlement here in the heart of the city, where people have been living in absolutely shocking conditions for many, many weeks now.
Did you have a chance to speak to any of the refugees before they were shipped off? Did they know what was happening?
No, none of the refugees were aware, as far as we understand what was happening. They were informed early this morning, similar to what happened on the 16th of March. when the site was dismantled several weeks ago.
Some people were complaining about what was going on here, sanitation, fears for safety. What was your response to that?
Well, the response to that was this was a situation that was appalling for everybody concerned. It was horrendous for the refugees who had to live in terrible conditions with no sanitation. It was terrible for local residents who had refugee settlements literally on their porches, and it was very difficult for local businesses. So it was a complete and total failure of migration policy in the state, and everyone suffered.
And everyone suffered. Those voices collected by Stephanie Roan in the Mount Street area in the wake of the dismantling of the tent city. Barry, you know, there will be maybe another tented village springing up somewhere else because there are still many people arriving.
Well, that's it, Pat. Since the start of December last year, the Department of Integration have said that they don't have the accommodation to accommodate newly arrived male asylum seekers. We've seen the figures rise to over 1,700 at one point of male asylum seekers who have not been able to get accommodation, and many of them were staying in Mount Street. We still have high numbers arriving every day. So where are these people going to stay? I would have no doubt that another tented village is going to pop up somewhere else.
All right, Barry White, our chief reporter, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.